Welcome to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean.
And you're listening to New England's foremost addiction and mental health program. Tonight we're talking about moms and moms who are in recovery, addiction and moms, recovery and moms.
Well, it's an interesting... I ran a moms group for a long time, and it was wonderful. And moms were so conscientious and so worried. I'm sure, you know, many of them weren't telling the truth. You know, it's like, oh, I wouldn't drink at all. And but meanwhile, they're being prescribed, you know, postpartum, they're being prescribed, you know, Klonopin, all the anti-anxiety meds and stuff like that. And they were, you know, I don't want to have my kid have alcohol, but, you know, I've been on this prescription for 2 years. And, you know, it's just kind of a real mix of, you know, people really trying to be conscientious and not knowing how to be.
It's the world's toughest job, being a mom. I'm happy to admit that. I'm around moms all the time, and they scare me with their strength and their superpowers.
And I
make sure not to cross them.
Well, it's really interesting because I remember having a particularly unwonderful morning on my way to work and walking down my front stairs, you know, and one of the steps is talking about addiction has made my life unmanageable. I'm like, but kids make your life even more unmanageable. You know, kids are impossible.
So we want to hear from you tonight.
And lovely. Hi, kids. I hope you're not listening.
We have two in-studio moms. We have four in-studio moms, but
yes,
two guests,
two that count.
Kim C. and Michelle M. have been kind enough to stop by the studio today and share their experience as mothers in recovery, and welcome you guys.
Thank you.
How you doing?
It got awful quiet in here.
It was
so loud, like
the
2 minutes ago.
On-air light came on, things got really quiet. So, Kim, I really want you to share your story. I've heard parts of it before. You know, tell us a little about, you know, your road to recovery and where you came from.
And being a mom.
How you balance that.
Yeah. I have two kids. My son is 21. My daughter is 17. My son is has mild autism, Asperger's. I started pretty young. You know, I started with all my friends, and it started out really fun, and then I couldn't stop, and, you know, then the drugs came into play, and, you know, all my friends moved on and got married and had families, and I pretty much stayed in the same spot. And, you know, when I was 21, my son came along, and along with a couple of prescriptions, you know, when I was leaving the hospital, that I actually saved for a couple of months. I didn't want to waste them on my
pain,
on my surgical. I took Tylenol instead. You know, I'm like, I'm gonna save these for Mother's Day. And you know, a couple years later, my daughter came along. You know, it was you know, I wasn't ready to be anybody's mother. I was not prepared for it. I did not embrace it. You know, I did the job. I loved my kids. I hated the responsibility that went along with it. Having a son with those kinds of disabilities, you know, gave me a really good excuse to use and to drink. And, you know, and I did that for a long time. I what did I do? You know, I didn't think it was, you know, you know, I know he's not listening to this right now. I don't even think my kids know what a radio is anymore. But
it's the old thing those old people listen to.
Yeah, the only way I could sit and play a game with them or talk to them or, you know, or anything was if I was on something. And it was crazy. And, you know, I by the time, you know, my son was 15 and my daughter was like 11 or 12, they both moved out. They both moved in with their dads. And, you know, I didn't really hold myself accountable to them for a really long time. You know, I had no responsibility, and I didn't answer the phone, you know, when their dad needed me. And, you know, I'm certainly doing my best to make up for that today. But, you know, once I once I put everything down and, you know, I found my way into, you know, recovery, I started going to meetings. You know, I have almost 2.5 years and, excuse me, thanks. And, you know, my relationship with my kids changed. You know, I didn't accept my son for what he was. You know, my son, you know, like I said, I blame my son for a lot of my problems. I blamed, you know, my kids' dads for all of my problems. I blamed everybody for my problems. And, you know, the only thing I had to do was not drink and not do drugs. And, you know, my life changed. And I think that my kids' lives changed, too, for the better, obviously. You know, I'm aware and I'm available to them. And we have, you know, we have a really good relationship. A lot of my relationships were strained. Nobody knew what I was doing. You know,
really? So it was totally a secret?
Yeah, it was. I, you know, I got a couple of younger family members that knew what I was up to. And, you know, every once in a while they'd come and, you know, Auntie, why don't you go to a meeting with me? And I'd be like, you know, I was good. I was all set.
I'm fine.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with me. And, you know, sometimes I felt a little mentally frail, you know, I thought I needed help like that, mm-hmm. but, you know, but I never sought out any type of help or anything. I didn't think I had a problem in spite of all the signposts and in spite of all of the, you know, the red flags and the falling down and, you know, and the neglect on other people and all of my relationships and all the things I tried to change absolutely everything about myself, you know, because I was a very, very unhappy, very ungrateful person, and I tried to change everything but that.
Great.
You know, I just said this earlier this morning, you know, I thought that drugs and alcohol was the glue that was keeping me together. You know, it was keeping, yeah. You know, it was the, yeah, I thought that's what kept me normal and kept me fun and, you know, it was obviously all a lie. But, you know, being in recovery, you know, my life has obviously changed drastically. I am not the same person that found their way into meetings, you know, mm-hmm. and I go to meetings every day. And, you know, when I do all the work that goes along with it and in my, you know, in this process, you know, I've found that, you know, I can help other people, especially women. And, you know, that's what my goal is today, you know, is to help other women. You know, I can't tell other people what to do or how to do it, you know, but I think with the experiences that I've had, you know, I might be able to make a difference, you know, and I feel like I could. I start school next month and I'm really looking forward to that. I never thought I'd be going to school. I never thought I'd be doing anything. I thought I'd be waiting tables my whole life. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know, because I love that kind of money, you know, but it was gone as quick as I got it, you know. But, you know, I have goals today, and I have some ambition, and, you know, I have self-respect, and, you know, there's a lot of things that I never, ever had that I have right now.
Have either of your kids talked about it at all?
With me?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my son really, you know, he just, you know, he asked me, you know, did you, you know, used to drink a lot and you couldn't stop? And, you know, that was the extent of that. He doesn't get too deep. But my daughter, you know, I have talked to my daughter about it. I've talked to her a lot about it. We have some pretty good conversations about it. I don't, you know, there's no need for her to know everything.
No.
You know,
do you worry about them?
I worry every minute about them, well, every second. I mean, she's 17 years old, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I was just getting rolling when I was 17.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
What do you share that with your daughter? Do you say, you know, do you share your concern with her?
Yes, absolutely.
How does she respond to that?
Well, you know, she gives me the same... You know, it's the same spiel I would have given anybody else. I can handle it.
I'm 17. You know? I got this.
Yeah, I can handle it, and yeah, that's basically. She's really good at appeasing me, you know. So, you know, I'll usually walk away thinking it's a successful conversation, you know, and she's laughing at me while I'm walking down the stairs. She's real smart, you know, real street smart, you know. So she knows all the right things to say, but it doesn't mean I believe her. But she's a good kid, and I'm really lucky.
So, I mean, we're gonna take a little break, but when we come back, we're gonna talk about some of the stigmas that are attached to, you know, women with addiction, and especially moms. It's a completely different dynamic when a father is out there using, and the,
yes,
and the like shame and guilt that's thrown on women just because of their mothers, and the difference in that dynamic. You're listening to Right Turn Radio.
So, Michelle, do you want to tell us your story?
Sure. It was really good listening to you, Kim.
Thank you.
I have a little bit of a different story. I started, you know, around the same age, 14, 15 years old, and I started drinking. And immediately when I started drinking, it was like I had grown up as this really, like, shy, timid little girl. And when I started drinking, it gave me, you know, this social lubricant that made me able to interact with my peers and not be terrified of what people thought of me. And it was almost like the most freeing feeling that I had ever felt. So I ran with that, and I loved drinking. And I started out going to a really good high school, and I come from a really good family. My parents are still married. I have three sisters. My dad has worked very hard all our lives to, like, give us everything we wanted. And then, you know, I started drinking, and things started getting real rocky at home. When I was about maybe 16, they found out that I was drinking, and they grounded me. And I spent 2 weeks grounded without drinking, and at the end of those 2 weeks, I just wanted to die. And I tried to kill myself, and I ended up in a psych unit. And when I was in the psych unit, you know, they were talking to me about substance abuse and stuff, and I wasn't ready to hear it. And I continued on the path that I was on throughout high school. By the end, you know, I had met a boyfriend, and I got into a really abusive relationship, and we were homeless together, and my parents put me in foster care, and I had this really, like, tragic, like, teenage years based on my substance abuse and the fact that, you know, I chose that above everything. By the time I was 22, which is when I started cleaning it up and getting sober, I was facing 5 years in state prison in New Hampshire, and my entire life had been turned upside down. It was actually on a Mother's Day in, I think, 2002. And my mom came to pick me up, and I was pretty much bruised from head to toe, and I was missing hair from my head, and I had no shoes. And, you know, my ex-boyfriend had beaten me up again, and she just looked at me and said, "I don't want anything from you for Mother's Day. I just want you to press charges on this kid and build your life." And I said, "Okay." And I tried, and I meant it, and I wanted to do what my parents wanted me to. I wanted to be a normal kid. I wanted to go to college. I wanted to have a good life. But, you know, the strength and hold that alcoholism and addiction has on my life is just more powerful than I am. So, you know, I tried, and I failed, and I ended up in a really bad situation where I was going to go to jail. And, you know, I had to do some things for a plea agreement, and one of them was go to a drug and alcohol abuse counselor who was local. And he looked at me, and he said, "You know what, Michelle, why don't you try to stop drinking?" And at the time, I was about 21 years old. And I looked at him, and I said, "Well, I drink like everybody else my age. I don't have a problem. I know what an alcoholic looks like, and it doesn't look like me." And he said, "You know, when you tell someone that they're going to lose their freedom if they don't stop, you know, that's a pretty good indication that someone's dependent upon substances." And I felt like I had been punched in the stomach, and it was when I first realized that I had a problem. I had that ex-boyfriend who had gone to jail, had gotten out of jail and gotten sober, and after about a year, we bumped into each other randomly, and he made an amends to me. And when he made his amends, he told me he was willing to do anything that he could to help me, just to let him know. And so when I went to the drug counselor, I ended up calling him and asking him if he could take me to some of the meetings that he was going to. And this kid helped me, and he did everything he could, you know, even though I know that he didn't want to. He did everything he could to help me get it together, and he introduced me to a woman who ended up helping me. I ended up actually not going to jail, which was really awesome. Mm-hmm. But when I walked in to that trial, I was 6 months sober, and I didn't know whether or not I was going to leave there willingly or not. And, you know, I believe it's because I made changes in my life, and, you know, I went into a 12-step fellowship, and I did the work, and I changed as a person. And, you know, talking about Mother's Day and looking at that Mother's Day years ago with my mom and what I put my parents through, because I, you know, I was listening to Kim and, you know, I was so self-centered, it wasn't even funny. And I didn't ever consider what I was doing and how it was affecting my parents and, you know, specifically my mom. And now the relationship that I have with them, because now I'm sober over 10 years and, you know, they help me. They're my biggest supporters. They take care of my son when I need help. And, you know, they're amazing. And to go from, you know, that history to now, I mean, there was a lot of work in between that, you know, it took to rebuild those relationships. But I think I was about 4 years sober when I got married and 6 years sober when I had a baby. And my son now is 3 and a half, and he's amazing. And, you know, I know we've been talking a lot about, like, balancing things, but, you know, it's kind of like you just put your head down and man up and do what you have to do, you know. And
that's woman up.
Woman up, whichever, you know. And it's been, you know, it's been an amazing journey. And, like, I can't imagine my life any other way right now. I can't imagine having the energy to go out and be in the struggle right now, honestly, with all the exhaustion from working and taking care of a baby and going to meetings and helping other women. Like, it's and that's, like, pertinent in my life is, you know, I do everything I can to help other women in, you know, in recovery. And I was always told that if I constantly help others, then I will stay happy and I will stay sober, and I don't want to go back to that lifestyle.
Wow, that was an amazing story. Wow. And you know, you said your parents are really supportive. Do they talk about your recovery with you?
Not really. It's kind of like I'm just sober. Like, they don't even come to my anniversaries and stuff now. It's just who I am, I think, to them. Mm-hmm. They don't really, it's almost, I don't want to say it's expected because they don't look at it like that, but it's just like.
They're used to it.
They're just used to it, yeah.
I feel like the skill set that women have as naturally as mothers is really good skill set to bring into recovery, like that nurturing thing. And there's something, you know, and I know a lot of women have difficulty early on in recovery, but when the women kind of bond together in recovery, there's really no force on earth that can pull that apart.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean,
I don't think the men have.
We at Right Turn had a young woman come up to be with somebody who had been in our program, and just watching Kim and her buddies kind of shepherd this person through, you know, recovery and through treatment, and it was like the women are going to take care of her.
So both of you have probably had to deal with a good amount of shame and guilt as part of your stories, and also the judgment that, I mean, I don't want to make too broad a statement, but society has a certain image of what a good mother should be. And then, you know, you having this history you hadn't used, Michelle, when your child was born, but Kim, you used during that time. Do you ever feel the burden of that judgment, you guys, of being a mother in recovery, and then what people must think about, oh, she couldn't handle her drugs or whatever, and she wasn't a good mother?
No, I held it together, you know, to a degree. You know, I managed to make it down to the Little League park and, you know, picking them up and dropping them off at school, you know, but I didn't want to be there. You know, I wasn't there, like, mentally. But as far as judgment, I don't really, you know, I can't think about that. You know, what other people think of me and what kind of mother I was. Because no one, in all honesty, no one can beat me up as much as I already have. Once I found my way into recovery, yeah. You know, I spent the first year doing that.
That's a really good answer.
Yes, I mean, I think that's true about most people, isn't it? But I think women are especially good at saying, this is what I should have done.
Right. You're going to shit all over yourself, as they say. I said it with respect. But our producer, Jill Ruby, also a mother, was saying that, yeah, it actually... Like, I have this image of, like, as soon as you have a baby, all of a sudden those hormones kick in.
Oh, yeah,
you're
that's
a natural
how it works.
Mother.
It is so hard.
You guys make it look so easy, though.
Well, that's what a friend of mine was complaining to her husband about why aren't you more helpful? He says, because you're so competent. She's like, but I need more help. I remember when my mom called, I'm like, what should I do? I need to take a shower. And I had this like 3-week-old or 5-week-old. She said, you know, you can put her down. I'm like, oh, I hadn't even thought of that. No, there's a lot of things. I mean, and it's been really interesting. I've worked with moms for years and years and years. And there is this incredible expectation of this is the way a mom should be. There are books and books and books and books out there. And in recovery or using substances is nowhere in there. And it's just really hard. And it's just wonderful to hear these stories of people who got sober, were willing to face their past and work their way through their lives.
Well, I'm wondering, because just being in early recovery is really, really hard if you're single and don't have to answer to anybody and don't have a job. And I can't imagine being in recovery and having kids and people that you have to take care of. How do you balance those two things?
Kim?
Oh.
Michelle? Michelle's back.
I can say, you know, even like being pregnant in recovery was really, really difficult. And then having a newborn and getting used to the balance, because in recovery, it's all about finding a balance. Like, and once you find it, it gets taken away again. The first like 3 months that I had my son, it was really, really difficult. There was the women in my life were amazing, just showing up, calling me, keeping me on point. I couldn't really get out very much. With my son, I had a C-section, so I was recovering for a period of time too. And you know, I was very, very lucky. I didn't work for the first like maybe year that he was born, so I was more lucky than most people, I think. So it was easier for me to find a balance. Now I can't imagine being trying to get sober while I have an infant. That I mean, my hat's off to women that do that, because that's really, really difficult to actually have to get out and go to a meeting every single night with a little baby and very little support. Like, that's very, very difficult. But that's how I did it. I have a supportive family. At the time I was married, and my ex-husband is in the program as well, so we would switch off, and even now we share custody and we switch off, and we both try to stay active in our own programs.
Well, it's really interesting. I've run women's programs, women and children together, and there are some meetings where kids are like welcome and encouraged, and a lot of meetings where people are like, there's these little comments made in the back about the kids being too noisy. And, you know, it's just hard to see, because it's hard enough getting sober as a woman, you know, a mom getting sober. And the supports just aren't out there. There isn't much treatment available for, and meetings are hard to find where kids are welcome.
Right. The other thing, too, is like, you know, I think for women there's a lot of shame involved. Ugh. And, you know, it's almost like we're already kind of like deferring to other people a lot. So then when people make comments like that, I've had women tell me, like, I never want to go back there because those comments were made, and we're supposed to be welcoming to everybody and supportive to everybody. Like, everybody's struggle is difficult. You can't judge people just because their struggle is different than yours.
Right.
So I kind of gravitate towards places that are more accepting of children, especially my son is crazy pants. So, you know, I need to be in more accepting places, and they're available. You just have to keep looking for them.
Yeah, they are. So keep trying. Kim, how do you balance it all?
Well, I was really lucky when I first got clean. My kids were living with their dads, so I didn't. My daughter was coming with me on the weekends. My son was like almost 20 years old. You know, he's all set with the weekends at Ma's house. You know, my daughter was coming to meetings with me, and or showing up at meetings while I was there, you know, to ask me for money and whatnot. And she, you know, everybody's gotten to know her, you know. And, you know, she was about 15 when I cleaned up. And, you know, a lot of people in the program know her. And, you know, my mother helped out a lot. You know, she stepped in a couple of times, you know, when my daughter needed a little extra. You know, I left my job when I was about 3 months clean, and focused on just on meetings. You know, my kids took a back seat most of their life, and then like the first 9 or 10 months, they stayed in the back seat. And you know, and I'm just starting to get it together. you know, in the last 7 or 8 months, being able to balance the kids and being able to, you know, be there for them, you know, as much as I would like to be, you know, available to them. And as far as the kids in the meetings, I don't think there's anything worse than people complaining about the kids in the meetings. I'm not like a big kid person, even though I have kids. And that is the only time that I'm not rolling my eyes at screaming babies is in a meeting. And, you know, when I see a young mother in there with her little kids in a carriage and getting off the bus and, you know, coming from a halfway house somewhere, even if it's just to hold the baby so they can go step outside during the break, you know, I'm glad they're there, you know, because that's where my kids should have been when they were small, you know. Yeah. But I didn't have the wherewithal to show up there at that time. You know, those kids should benefit, you know, from their mother's, you know, trying to get recovery.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I've really noticed is that, excuse me, sorry, guys. One of the things I've really noticed is that women are wonderful supports that way. If you find the meeting that women are at, and it's a welcoming meeting or any or a program or groups or anything, that there is that somebody who can hold your baby while you know for those 3 seconds if you need to go to the bathroom. But the other thing I've noticed is balance is impossible, and when you have kids. And, you know, life balance, an absolute balance is impossible. And there's this myth that it's out there. And it just means, you know, you have a week where there's small victories. You know, you get most of it done and nobody's, you know, had major problems. And that's what balance looks like. It doesn't look like, you know, you have the perfect job, the perfect kids. You get to go to all the meetings. You get to do it all. And there's kind of, I think balance is the one major myth out there, is that you can have everything you want and you just can. And it's really hard to figure out what part you're going to give up, what day, what hour. And so you guys are doing amazing jobs having some kind of balance in your life. And life is unmanageable when you add kids.
And you know, with kids also, especially newborns, there's an isolation that you get, and you were talking about women bringing meetings to you and things like that, but to be able to have that that kind of, you know, you have to make the child, like, central to your focus, a newborn, and it has to become your life, and to balance, there is no balance, but you have to have recovery. That's a really highly emotional time for somebody, any parent, man or woman. And to have that, you know, to have that keep your recovery in the forefront while you're raising the kid is a difficult thing. I know lots of moms have a really hard time with that.
Yeah. And, you know, and addiction affects a lot of people. So they're not going to say all of a sudden, ooh, I'm not, you know, addiction's not going to avoid
right. Pregnant
women and, you know, young moms.
It's not going to take a break while you're
right. Raising. Well, it's also interesting because there is so much, you know, there's so much depression associated with it and so right. Many mood swings. And a lot of people are medicated for them. And a lot of people self-medicate yeah. For those things.
The other thing is that women in general react to substances differently. And what there's, you know, some generalities you can talk about with women and addiction, why sometimes they're harder to treat because they have more stuff they come to the table with.
Right. You come with children, families, you know, jobs, all these emotional responsibilities that women are responsible for.
Yeah.
They have to also take care of everybody else.
And often there's, if a woman is an addiction, there's some trauma associated with it and things like that, so it becomes a more complex treatment issue.
Yes.
If you've got kids and you're coming into treatment, there's a whole world. If family's going to take care of them, is you know...
Or they're coming with you to treatment.
Right. Yeah. So you're listening to Right Turn Radio. We'll be back right after a break.
I just wanted to throw in my research. That because it's important to know these things about women, and then we're going to talk about how you get help. The reason we talk about women and moms as separate is women progress more quickly into having problems with addiction or alcohol. They using leads to addiction more is more likely to lead to addiction. They develop medical consequences sooner. They develop social consequences quicker. And you think about that. If a mom is drinking and she's caring for a kid and she's driving, she's more likely to get in trouble for that because she's more likely to be driving a kid.
Right.
They find it harder to quit. They're more susceptible to relapse, and they less likely to seek out help. And most women who seek out help often go to counselors, mental health counselors, and say, my life is a mess. And then they can continue to not talk about their addiction because they want to hear about, you know, tell me about your childhood. It's, you know, it's easier to mask it. So women don't get help as easily. But they should. And there's not a lot of research on this, but there are more and more programs oriented to women.
When we interviewed the author of a book called Drink, whose name I can't remember at the moment, it made a big impression on me. There was a fact in there that men tend to drink to socialize and heighten positive feelings, but women drink to drive away negative feelings.
Wait,
does that ring true with you guys?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Her name was Ann Dowsett Johnston, by the way. So women bring to the table a lot of, you know, they have cultural stuff and gender specific stuff that makes it harder or a different treatment is sometimes important. How do women find treatment? How do mothers find treatment?
How did you guys find help for yourselves?
To get into recovery?
Yeah, how'd you do it?
Well, I have two younger family members that brought me to a meeting. And referring back to what Michelle was saying, I also had, an ex-boyfriend that got clean, and he also helped me, too. A lot of our stories are parallel. Like, yeah. Any mother of a future alcoholic is definitely a champion grounder, first of all.
What do you mean?
I was punished literally my whole entire childhood. My mother's going to be psyched. Yeah, always grounded, always. But so there were people that were paying attention. It was three, you know.
There were three people in your
family? Three people, two people in my family, and then an old friend of mine. Who were paying attention, and that's how I ended up.
And they kept saying, do you want to go to a meeting
yeah.
with me? I'm going to a meeting.
Yeah. I said, no, I'm going to get a tattoo, and I'm going to the gym. I'm good.
Got this.
Yeah. So, but that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, I mean, I was so young that everybody was like, well, we just hope she grows out of this.
Right.
And in my opinion, I wasn't even an alcoholic or an addict because I was so young. So it was pertinent for me to be facing some serious consequences. And even when I did sober up, I didn't think that I needed treatment because I didn't believe I was even an alcoholic or an addict. So I actually physically detoxed in meetings. And wow. When I was shaking and going through this, I just thought it was wintertime. I got sober in February. So I just thought it was really cold and really scared because I was terrified all the time and completely consumed with what everybody else was thinking about me. So I'm spilling coffee all over myself while I'm shaking and having DTs and withdrawals.
Whoa.
And when the woman that helped me looked at me when I was like a week sober, and she was like, thank goodness you didn't have a seizure and die from the amount that you were consuming, because I had not drawn a sober breath for about 7 years. I mean, I was grateful to have the I also had some family members that were sober, two uncles and an aunt who had long-term sobriety, but they never tried to get me to come to Alcoholics Anonymous or any other 12-step program because they just wanted me to find my own way. They were all supportive, but I just, you know, I needed the court's intervention, I think.
Well, it's really interesting because I know the state of Massachusetts and nationally, they notice that one of the reasons women would leave treatment is because of their children.
Yeah.
You know, I can do this for 5 days, because somebody will watch my kids. So they implemented a bunch of programs that included the children in treatment. And there's programs for pregnant women and pregnant and parenting women. And there aren't enough of them, of course, but they do exist because what happens is moms drop out of treatment or don't get into treatment because they'll lose custody of their kids, which you will if you admit, hi, yeah, I need to go into treatment and I have some kids. And, you know, you may very well lose custody, but you can actually get treatment with your kids there. There are also day programs that have child care available. So there are treatment things available. Way not enough. And there are some of the bigger programs like that we send moms to, you know, that in other states as well that also have it. But mostly, you know, mostly there's men's treatment, mostly there's single women treatment, and there is also treatment for women moms. This is what I did for a lot of years.
Yeah, I love this.
I loved it. Treating moms and their kids together just meant that you could fix all the bonds that had been kind of lost. So there's all these treatment programs that, you know, you're not only helping the mom get sober and the kid live a stable life, you're helping them kind of grow this bond that, you know, and help them have a relationship that they never got to have with each other.
Well, I'd like to thank the two moms that came here today. Kim C., thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
And Michelle M., it was great having you guys in. You're welcome back anytime.
Awesome.
Oh my God.
Thanks for having us.
Give amazing. You guys your own radio show. But it's
called MIR, Moms in Recovery.
Right. Yeah, there you go. But it's inspiring, too, you know, and there is a ripple effect that's had when moms get in recovery, when parents get in recovery.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
You've been listening to the Right Turn Radio Podcast. Check us out at right-turn.org. I'm John Cohan.
And I'm Abby Dean. Remember, be safe and ask for help.